Breakfast. The Honest Truth.
With Benito Vergatini.
Smile 90.4 FM.
Joining us in conversation this evening to paint a picture on our country's progress in integrating the latest climate change impact assessment, as well as to shed light on whether we're doing enough to address climate change, is the senior associate in the environmental and mining regulatory practice at Cliff Dekker Hofmeyr, Alicia Pinaar. Alicia, good evening, and thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Evening, thank you for having me.
Are you able to just explain what our current regulatory framework looks like and how environmental impact assessments is currently governed?
Yes, sure. So generally, the EIA process is currently governed under our framework environmental statute, namely the National Environmental Management Act, or what we refer to as NEMA, as well as the EIA regulations promulgated thereunder. Essentially, EIA is an environmental licensing assessment process or tool that is triggered by developments that are likely or anticipated to have an environmental impact or are otherwise situated in more environmentally sensitive areas. Now, whilst there are standard prescribed factors to be taken into account during this assessment process, each development and project will naturally be influenced by its particular context, including environmental sensitivity, locality, socioeconomic considerations, extent or nature of the development, and so on, you know. NEMA is quite broadly drafted in this respect, requiring that the competent authority considering the licensing application take into account all relevant factors. Now, some of the most important factors in this regard feeding into the EIA assessment process will be the input received from stakeholders as part of the public participation process and, of course, findings of specialist assessments that could range from, let's say, geohydrological to terrestrial to, as we are discussing today, climate change.
I would presume that this entire process would be independent. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. It is generally also required in terms of the EIA regulations to be independent. So project developers will be required to appoint an independent environmental assessment practitioner to undertake the assessment process.
And what progress, Alicia, has there been in South Africa in terms of integrating, say, the climate change considerations into development planning?
Well, I think when referring to progress, it is important to understand, you know, where we are coming from. Integrating climate change into development planning really initially started out as a best practice consideration during the EIA process, where environmental assessment practitioners, just referred to, or specialists, would rely on international developmental guidance. However, the pressures and appreciation of assessing and understanding the climate change implications of development increased significantly upon South Africa's adoption and ratification of the Paris Agreement, the latter which occurred, I think I recall, towards the end of 2016. There was definitely sort of, you know, a dialogue and perspective shift in respect of the materiality of climate change considerations within our existing regulatory framework, including the EIA process. And this is ultimately what informed and what was referenced by the High Court in the precedent setting Tabamesi judgment in 2017. Now, this is the case that was ultimately the stimulus behind the Department of Forestry, Fisheries and the Environment's recent publication of the National Guideline for Consideration of Climate Change Implications in Certain Environmental Licensing Applications. Now, this is really a massive step because although this guideline is in draft form, it's for the first time, you know, we're having something that's more tangible in the regulatory space in respect of these assessments.
Is this also one way to ensure that the government sticks to all the agreements that form part of the Paris Accord?
Yes, it is. It is a method, you could say, that feeds into the overall EIA process. So what will ultimately happen is this assessment will be considered by the competent authority when looking at these environmental licensing applications, and they will naturally be required to look at it within the context of our commitments under the Paris Agreement and see how it aligns with that.
Mm. the recent release of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the sixth assessment report, apparently was released a few months ago. What did it once again highlight, Alicia?
So basically, I think it really highlighted something that we already know, but it again stressed the urgency of addressing climate change quite, as I would say, urgently, to avoid anything more than the 1.5 degrees increase in the global temperature. And that is something I think that will definitely underpin and be highlighted and discussed in the upcoming conference of the parties of COP26, where everyone is now sort of coming together to discuss achieving net zero carbon emissions by 2050.
You mentioned that the national guideline for the consideration of climate change has recently been released, and it's been quite a game set. What is the ultimate goal of this guideline?
So the purpose of the guideline, once in final form and promulgated, because it's still draft, is really to provide a baseline set of considerations that will allow for what we call a consistent approach in undertaking these climate change impact assessments and assist developers to really assess, understand, manage, and importantly, adequately mitigate project impacts that may contribute to climate change. I think providing guidance in this regard really holds immense benefits for practice, and I think that it goes beyond advisors, developers, authorities, and stakeholders having an outline of what can be considered an adequate climate change impact assessment, but really it has the potential, we hope, to limit the grounds for challenges in respect of the adequacy or the adequacy of these assessment processes for environmental licenses. You know, these challenges generally delay or prevent the commencement of projects, and this has really become particularly relevant considering the increase in climate change litigation both here and internationally. Mm. And then, as you mentioned, it can be used as a tool in assisting authorities not only in evaluating these licensing applications, but also fulfilling its own obligations in respect of authorizing projects that will align with our commitment. And I really do think it's arguably something that could strengthen the EI process. You know, as it by its very nature, the special findings, the recommendations, all of that will ultimately factor into project development, technology, engineering design, and hopefully also ultimately stimulate innovation in the climate change space. Mm. And that's really what we need.
It certainly sounds like good progress, Alicia. And lastly, just can we then, given this regulatory framework and the progress that has been made, can we rest assured that should there be, for example, developments on an environmental sensitive area, that given the framework, that nothing untoward will be transpiring?
So, I mean, naturally that would be the hope, but I think what's very important in terms of these assessments to always remember is that they are all underpinned by the notion of sustainable development. I mean, that's ultimately what underpins our whole environmental law framework.
Yes.
So the fact that the development is occurring will not necessarily mean there will be no impact, but definitely that they've been adequately assessed, the appropriate mitigation measures have been identified, and that the project will be implemented and developed and operated in accordance with specific conditions and management measures that have been approved and, again, been assessed and identified by specialists.
Mentioning that, because there's been also just a lot of talk around this particular, this just transition, the interplay or the role that the regulatory framework can play in this regard. Do you have any thoughts on this?
And definitely. And I mean, the just transition definitely also, I think, is also underpinned by the concept of sustainable development, which ultimately is given effect by these assessments. Because,
yeah,
as mentioned before, they take into account environmental sensitivities, but also socioeconomic considerations, which is very fundamental to this just energy transition that we're talking of. And naturally, renewables have a very important role to play in the energy dynamic and mix going forward, but there are also various other factors that interplay with this that need to be considered.
Appreciate your insights on this. Alicia Pinar is Senior Associate in the Environmental and Mining Regulatory Practice at Cliff Dekker Hofmeyr. Alicia, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your time.